Great. Our last speaker of this session is Dr. Christina Bethel. She's a professor in the Department of Pediatrics at Oregon Health and Science University. Christy is also the founding director of the Child and Adolescent Health Measurement Initiative and the director of MCHB's National Data Resource Center for Child and Adolescent Health. She's going to be talking about optimizing systems of care for children with special health care needs using a life course perspective. So, Dr. Bethel.
It's so great to be here. I feel really honored to be able to represent the team and also many other people that came together just to think really broadly. And so I'm going to be widening the lens a little bit from the detailed presentations you've been getting about the need for or potential for focusing the life course perspective, research, and programs and policies for children with special healthcare needs, and to really step back and evaluate our current systems, the Maternal Child Health Bureau's system of care for children with special healthcare needs, as well as the data sets that have these wonderful presentations, at least two of them have been based on, and what are their potential and also gaps for giving us some information in going forward to think about how the life course may apply for children with special health care needs. So I just want to acknowledge my co-authors, Paul Newacek, Amy Fine, Bonnie Strickland, Cambria Wilhelm, who has an MPH and isn't on here, so I wanted to say, Richard Antonelli, Linda Homburg, and Nora Wells, and also many others who participated in a series of meetings and dialogues around this issue over the last couple of years. I have nothing to disclose by way of relationships. So as most of you know from Amy Fine and Milt Kalachek's paper, if you're in maternal child health, their life course theory or life course perspective can be explained in terms of really four different components that reflect the dynamic nature of health, which all of us intuitively know because we're human beings and we live life and we know this. We know that the biology of our being and the psychosocial environments and all of those things are impacting our health. But how that plays out in healthcare is something that we still have yet to advance. But so looking at health across life, the timeline, across at key points, the timing, and in complex contexts, both physical environment, social environment, emotional environment, I would say even, and so on. And with continuous learning to reduce disparities, so equity is a key piece here because it's often where we can learn a lot, you know, variation is information, and there's certainly a lot of variation that we can start to learn from, and also it's very critical to improving the health of the entire population to stay very, very focused on that issue of equity. So what are the implications for healthcare is one of the questions, and you know, some people say, well, how is this any different than good primary care and what we've been talking about for a long, long time? And I think it really is different, actually, in bringing into the more center the dynamic nature and how to work more with information in real time and think about it across time is kind of different. It's more complex and it requires more information and more flow of information and partnerships, which I'll be talking about. And so it's more of an explicit focus on promoting and optimizing health beyond the acute care model, which we seem to be still stuck in much of the time, even for children with special health care needs, and enhanced capacity, both in knowledge, skills, and resources related to being able to manage this dynamic context that we're trying to think through. Our starting point question, again, was how can we establish a system of services for children with special health care needs that yields optimal health and well-being across time, and how well do our existing systems address that, and also the data systems we have, what can we learn from them? I'm not going to go through this because I've already gone through it. So for most of you, you know that children with special health care needs are defined as any child who has an ongoing condition of any kind for which they require an above routine or type or amount of services beyond that required by children generally. And operationalizing this definition, with the exception of not taking out the at-risk component of the MCHB's definition, we have about 15 to 20% in the United States and about 1 in 4 families. So there are three main conclusions that our work culminated in, which now that I look at them seem incredibly obvious. But actually was a little bit of a road to prove to ourselves that there actually was a need for some sort of a unique focus or a special focus on children with special health care needs in the broader life course work. And, of course, the first is the growing complexity of the conditions and the needs that children with special healthcare needs face. I'll say more about that. The enhanced vulnerability of children to any gaps in the system, which are, you know, sort of in transient and getting to be legendary at this point after many, many efforts and cycles of healthcare reform over the last many decades, and the growing strength of the evidence linking child and adult health. So those are the three main arguments for why we're suggesting, again, what may seem obvious, but that there should be a special focus. And there hasn't really been up till now, so most of the life course research has focused on preconception and prenatal, and that's wonderful and really critical, but we want to make sure that we don't forget children who already have healthcare needs and health conditions. So just to review that really quickly, children with special healthcare needs, over 90% of them do experience functional difficulties, probably more than that because the survey, this is based on only asked about 14 different types of difficulties. The majority of them have co-occurring conditions, so we're not really ever talking about a child with just one thing, very rarely. Most children who have special healthcare needs have more than one type, and also require multiple specialized services. So even though we can think of gradients of complexity, if you think of a simple complexity algorithm as they have more than one health problem that involves various aspects of their being and require multiple specialized services that are located in various places in a community and on a continuum, most children with special healthcare needs have complex needs. The prevalence of impacting conditions, meaning conditions that are impacting school, play, and day-to-day life, has increased over the last 30 years. This is based on work by Neil Halfon and Paul Nowacek and Amy Hautrow and some others, and especially with the rise of emotional, behavioral, and developmental problems such as ADHD, which was presented on earlier. And really, when you look at anybody who's done assessments of these complex systems that Michaela's presentation was focused on, just on autism, imagine for everything, we need these complex adaptive systems that are effective. And people have studied, why is it that we keep talking about needing that and we're not seeing a lot of progress? And some of your comments, Michaela, I think pointed to why and the complexity of it. But when we look at it, we basically still end up with the conclusion that the current health care system is ill-equipped to really deal with people with complex and multiple conditions, and also falls short in addressing the social, psychosocial, and behavioral dimensions of chronic illness, which the research continues to present evidence are absolutely critical and perhaps the major missing piece in advancing their health now as well as over time. So this is a little visual of the Maternal and Child Health Bureau's system of services for children and youth with special healthcare needs, and it involves six different dimensions around making sure children have adequate insurance. I wish I had my pointer. Actually, can I get my pointer? It might make me 10 seconds off. Actually, when I get to the slides. But I'm not going to go through this. If people want the slides, I can send them to them. But this actually is an attempt to show the dynamic nature of the system of services model itself. It's not six different things. They're meant to work together. And if they don't work together, then, you know, we start to see fallout. So I'll go through these. I'm not going to go through these in detail because most of you know what they are. But it's basically to say that all of the pieces are meant to work together in a system of care. And gaps reflected in performance on this model, which as it's operational now and measured by the Maternal and Child Health Bureau through the national surveys, really reflect the capacity and competency gaps that I'm speaking of. So we see 8 out of 10 children with special healthcare needs age 0 to 11 experiencing one or more major gaps in the measures in experiencing a system of care, and only 1 in 5 children and youth with special healthcare needs meeting all of these criteria. And this is just showing across age. Does anyone actually have a pointer? Because I'm going to start getting into graphs that go across time, and it might be very useful. Okay, good. I'll stop on that then. So examples of key gaps that really pop out of the data, and Reem pointed this out in her presentation, one is focus on families and communities, the vital role that families, communities, and environment have in the support and care of children with special health care needs. And there's a lot that can be said about this and has been said about this. And so this is a major gap that we see. The focus on the whole child. So the medical home model would really theoretically have us focusing on the whole child, but we really don't necessarily address what that really means beyond sort of medical interventions and getting things organized there. But what about the impact at critical points in the child's developing self-image, their sense of meaning, their school performance and friendships, and how that plays out over time? And also the real impact of the family experience of having a child with a special health care need, which is, you know, being focused on the financial piece, but there's also a lot of other pieces of impact that are important to recognize. And then the focus on health promotion. Every time we look at it, children with special health care needs are less likely to receive baseline levels of health promotion and preventive services. And, you know, obviously, you know, there's more likely to be overweight or obese, more likely to smoke, more likely to have all of the health risks that we look on the Youth Risk Behavior Survey. Are more common even for children with special health care needs. So that gap is really critical if we think that health behaviors count and matter. So, and then lastly, the point was the link between child and adult health. And I don't know the details of this statistic, but it's from the CDC apparently, is a third of adult disability days being attributable to conditions and risks that arose in childhood. But with the studies on adverse childhood events and other studies, I think it's probably more than that. I mean, I think that we are a continuum in and of ourselves. It's hard to imagine that it's not stronger, but at least what can be pinned down in a more objective way that you could argue a third, which is already a lot. And so I think we have a lot of opportunity to hopefully jumpstart the system to focus more on children, but it still is very difficult. There's some shorter-term health costs if the long-term health costs don't seem to be able to make their way as being compelling. The average adjusted mean medical expenditures for children with special health care needs are obviously much higher for children with special needs than not, and this is from the MEPS data. And if they have more complex needs or an emotional behavioral developmental problem, it's even higher. And then it can, you know, there's other ways of crossing this that can show it goes up even higher for kids with functional issues, which is not a small proportion, about a quarter of children with special health care needs. So just, I'm not going to go through these in too much detail, but wanted to let you know that we've done some nice crosswalk between the systems of care, the MCHB systems of care model, and how it could apply to a life course perspective already. It's not measured in all of its glory, but all of the concepts are there. And I think that just the shared decision making and shared partnership and shared ownership component, if you start to look at what's really going to be needed at the core of transforming healthcare to reflect more of a life course perspective, it's that partnership element. And these are all around the center of this, or the perimeter of this, is all of the things that one could imagine would be happening in an ideal family professional partnership. And we're only measuring sort of the shared decision making component within the national survey. But this is really central and a core competence, I think, reflects how to address one of the core competencies. The other is the medical home, again, embedded within it, especially as measured in the national surveys versus in some other models that are out there, like the NCQA model, which is primarily structural. This actually measures the relationship. It can be strengthened. There's many components that one might strengthen that we've identified, actually, as a team. But right now, if it were to be implemented as envisioned, it should go a long way to especially addressing this whole child concept and whole community concept. And then finally, the most obvious probably one for life course is the early and continuous screening, both screening for risks and protective factors, strengths and resilience. And that is really a critical piece of a life course perspective is, you know, all of us have strengths and resources regardless of the risks that we face, and we really don't focus on optimizing them. And if you just practice in your own life, what are the resources I'm not tapping into or taking in or recognizing? It's pretty astounding, even just in my life, I noticed that. And I think that we're really needing to recognize. There are a lot of positive deviants, as they say, children with any number of risks who are really doing well, and there's reasons for that, and we don't study that. And so that's a major area that we would study if we were to take life course perspective really seriously for children with special health care needs. So I'm not going to go into this, but this one is blatant. And why is it that we have still such a hard time in primary care actually conducting even the screenings that are recommended, which we aren't doing universally by any stretch of the imagination, which gets some of the systems issues that Mikayla was talking about, I think. So I'm just going to skirt through some national data findings, and this is really just to whet your appetite for what's possible and what might be available in these national data sets, and some of it's been presented here today already, but there's a wide array, and I want to really encourage you to look at it yourself and look at some things that are interesting to you, because we didn't know when we started whether we thought we could speak to the life course perspective using these data sets. So first of all, we created a synthetic timeline. Obviously, the data is cross-sectional, so it's not really time. But we created a synthetic timeline across age groups and then identified hypotheses and questions that brought together the environmental component and equity component and children's health and well-being. So trying to look at, is environment impacting health and well-being across age groups and by different vulnerability classes, if you will. We actually ran adjusted odds ratios on the results, but not all of it can be shown, and you'll see why in a minute. I'm really just gonna fly through this. But we looked at variations in particular for factors across ages by CSHCN status and complexity of children with special health care needs, and the adjustments included income, insurance type, family structure, race, gender, and where appropriate, the severity and complexity of special health care needs. So timeline, today's experiences and exposures influence tomorrow's health. The health status and needs of children with special health care needs, prevalence increases across time. This is where my pointer would come in handy to guide your eye. So you're going to have to trust me and get my slides afterwards. but it re-increases across time for all children with special health care needs. And the red group is the more complex group of children. The health status and needs of children with special health care needs impact increase in their impact and complexity over time, and meaning across age groups, both in the prevalence of children experiencing functional difficulties and the number of functional difficulties that they experience. And overall, about one quarter, we're not going to go into that. We don't have time. So the other timeline point of interest that comes out is the increase in emotional behavioral developmental problems, ADHD being one of them, who meet criteria for having a special health care need related to emotional behavioral developmental problem, as well as having one of the seven conditions that are asked about in the survey. About 2 in 5 children with special health care needs have some type of emotional behavioral development problem. And so you're starting to see that comorbidity being pretty striking and impactful. And then this is an area where the trajectories were similar in the sense that the slopes were similar, but the children with special health care needs were higher both in not being engaged in school and having to repeat a grade in school. So this speaks to a hardwired potentially impact of having a special health care need on school, that certainly if we could get up underneath that would have potentially major life course impacts. So speaking to that, one of the ways we get up underneath that is to help children be ready for school, and one of the key pieces of that is making sure they enter school with any risks identified and attended to, especially developmentally. And we're finding that children with special health care needs are less likely to children with special health care needs at high risk are who are screened for developmental behavior problems are more likely to have an IEP or our individualized family services plan. So this is really good news. It means we might be making a difference. There might be something that we can do in the existing systems as they are formulated now that could really make a difference for children. And it does look like screening can make a difference. And this is for high-risk children only. So these are children that you don't argue need something like this. Transition to adulthood services appears to be impacting the association with parent employment, and that also is intersecting with medical home, which I can't explain in depth, but children who have received transition to adulthood services, which is another timing issue, have parents who are less likely to report having to cut back on work. And this is with adjustment. And that environment, I've got 1 minute, my goodness. So can I have 2 minutes over that? Or no? I'm taking time now. Okay, so basically I'm just going to let you know that there's some environment, home environment impacts health and is attenuated by those who have a medical home. So if you have, I'm just going to, we did 47 graphs, and so I'm not going to present them all to you. I'm trying to just get, you know, whet your appetite here. But basically, home environment matters. If you have a medical home, it matters. It attenuates the risk of that in terms of social behaviors and consistently impacting the child's health. So that's what that graph is. So to end, what we need, where there is to go, we obviously need to accelerate learning because there's some very basic just understanding the disease course questions that we do not understand. Like that would be important, the natural course of disease. But early life experiences, role of critical and sensitive periods, the impact of positive and negative influences, but also really keeping it in the dynamic realm of why is it that we don't always see the thing that we're expecting. We actually see something more positive or more negative, and enriching our methodologies and our data. And clearly the data I presented today can't go into all of that because it's not longitudinal and there are some components missing. So we actually have a little set of recommendations that I can share with you or that will be shared with you for that. And finally is really listen to Michaela's presentation on advancing core competencies and emerging models of care. It's really about becoming actually competent to develop systems of care dealing with the financing and issues around incentives and coverage, culture, which right now we have a lot of cultural barriers to even implementing medical home models, which many of you who are doing that know about, let alone really, really getting partnership-based models that go beyond tokenism partnership, but really partner with families and communities. Organization and capacity issues, which might actually be the easiest things to address once we address the other two things. And finally, the relationship and information flow issues, which when people study systems, those are the two pieces that are often the most missing, is the quality and consistency and strength of relationships and information flow, even with all these other components. So we have to get around that. So that's my presentation.
Well, first, I'd like you to join me. We had 4 great presentations, and please join me in thanking all of them. Because we started a little late, we really didn't have time for questions. Why don't we take a few questions now? We're right at 10 o'clock, so please, we can turn on the light so we can see. Any questions? Yes. Thank you. Other questions? Yes.
My last name is CHELLC@OHSU.edu. What's that?
Would you mind repeating it?
I don't mind. CHELL.
OHSU.edu. No, here BETHELLC@OHSU.edu. You're welcome.
Thank you.
Yes, Chris.
For Michaela. With
go back, but screening after screening after screening, and they have so many other complex needs.
Yeah, so that wasn't part of our evaluation, but that was definitely something that they brought up. That was really a framework that they wanted to establish and we're working towards. Mm-hmm. So they were really just starting at these frontline providers, recognizing signs and symptoms and getting kids into
Michaela, they can't hear you in back,
oh,
so maybe you can come up here. No, you must come to the microphone.
Sorry, do you just want to repeat the question? I don't know if anyone can hear you.
Okay, so just my question was the pipeline of screening, you know, both at the pediatrician level and then from there, I was just wondering the impact on families to have to go back for multiple screening to different providers.
Yeah, so that pipeline was really a framework that was developed by Washington, but what was what the other states were doing as well. And what I was saying was that they were really focused on getting these frontline providers who are not just primary care providers to recognize these signs and symptoms and get the kids into that first tier and then work to strengthen and funnel out and funnel in children as they go forward. So they were definite. That's what I'm sure they're dealing with now, but just to get that started in within 3 years and get all those partners together was pretty remarkable, which was what we were looking at. So I'm not sure what they're doing now and everything, but I love my state, so.
Yes.
I think that's a great point. You're right. I mean, that was sort of my first gut reaction was that, you know, parents were just in less of a, or caregivers were in less of a position to negotiate a, you know, flexible work schedule and things like that. So, and again, some of it was also just from the literature that I'd read around the effects that parents were experiencing. So I think there's also, you know, another piece there around unemployment and, you know, we can't quite get at that with the survey. And again, there's this other piece around, you know, are these, this is also just reflecting kids are, their conditions are better controlled, and so maybe there's a less of a need. So I'm not sure if that's truly that parents just can't and want to, which is what some of the literature suggests, or if it's that maybe there's just less need and that's maybe a good thing. So I think there's a couple of different things going on there, and I couldn't tease them out in these analyses, but I appreciate your question.
While we take, are there any more questions? Great. Who has the sign-up sheets?
Oh,
did everybody sign up?
No,
if you didn't,
yeah.
If you didn't sign up, maybe you can sign up on the way out. Once again, thank you so much for coming. We really appreciate your attendance.